The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Well, we are once again on the very edge of celebrating God's spring holy days, Exodus 13. And from the beginning of human history, God's people, I believe, have performed a unique act at this time of year, that is something that today occurs all around the world, and that is this: the people of God remove leavening from their homes. Every year, thousands of people empty their homes, and they'll scour the kitchen, they'll clean the floors, they'll vacuum, they'll look all over to find any evidence of leaven, and they do a sort of spring cleaning every year. And they'll try to remove sometimes almost every crumb from their houses. And they do this, I wonder, that is, when they do this, do they do it with real understanding? Will they be thinking? And what will they be thinking about when they do this? Because we are to be doing it as a continual reminder. It is a message from God. As you remember in the Old Testament, there were prophets of God, and they would have to perform certain acts. They would lay on their side for a certain number of days, and it represented a message a certain number of years, perhaps that a siege would take place. And so these were called acted oracles. They acted out a message. And what we do on these holy days, we act out a message by taking leaven out of our homes. Exodus 13 verse 6, God says this: 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day shall be a feast unto the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and there shall no leavened bread be seen with you, neither shall there be leaven seen with you in all of your quarters. And you shall show your son in that day, saying, this is done because of that which the Lord did unto me when I came forth out of Egypt. And he says this: it shall be for a sign unto you upon your hand, for a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth, for with a strong hand he brought you out of Egypt. And so you understand what God is saying here. Here is his sign or mark. That is, there is a counterfeit mark of holidays that are pagan in origin that exist. But God has a sign, and he has a mark to be worn in his, in our right hand and on our forehead. What does he mean by that? Well, as I've said, I think earlier, it has great meaning for us, because we're to do something with our strength, with our hand, our right hand. But we're to think about it, because this is where the frontal lobes are, right here in your forehead. We're to think about what we're doing, and it's to have meaning for us when we do it. And so God gives us this as a sign to do. It's a memorial between our eyes where we are to think about it. And so keeping God's Passover is to remind us of something very, very important, and we're to think about what we're going to do this day and over the next week and so on. Think about what it is you're doing when you have, you're down in the catacombs of your stove looking for crumbs, looking for where leaven might be somewhere in your house. Let's go over to 1 Corinthians. 11. And we'll pick up another familiar scripture that we read when we come to these days each year, because Paul recorded for the Gentile brethren in Corinth how they were to keep the Passover. And he said this in 1 Corinthians 11 and in verse 27, wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. And then he says, so let a man, or a woman if you will, examine themselves, and so let them eat of that bread and drink of that cup. And so it is that we're to examine ourselves before we take the Passover. We're to be thinking, looking inside, doing a search within us, examining ourselves. And it, we're to do this in the context of putting the leaven out of our house. So we are performing an act, and he wants us to think. And in so doing, we're to examine ourselves. God is a doer. And God is a thinker. And so we're to do this. Think about it. Learn from it. And examine ourselves as we put out this leaven, as it were. And this is, to me, one of the beauty of God's way of life. And as you know, the symbols in the world's holidays have very little to do with Jesus Christ. What does a lily have to do with him? What do eggs have to do with him, you see? But what does unleavened bread have to do with him? A great deal. It represents his way of life, humility, flat. What you see is what you get. It's not puffed up. It's not something that's corrupted. It's real and has everything to do with him. And leaven, then, is portrayed in the Scriptures as a type of sin and that which corrupts. 1 Corinthians 5, again, Paul is teaching the Gentiles here. This was a great metropolitan city, much like Los Angeles, with travelers coming from all parts of the world, and primarily a Gentile community. And so he said this to them, 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 2, beginning there. He said to them, because he wrote this during the days of unleavened bread, and he told the Corinthians, you are puffed up, and you haven't rather mourned that he that had done a deed might be taken away from you. And so it was that he put out someone for sin in the congregation, because he didn't want that sin to begin to affect everybody else, the way leaven spreads through a lump of dough. And then he says this in verse 6, your glorying is not good. That is, they were puffed up. They were proud. They thought they were more merciful, you might say, than God. And so your glorying's not good, he says. Know you not that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? And then he says to purge out, therefore, the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened, that is, because of Christ's sacrifice. For even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, neither the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And so there again, you see this imagery, don't you, of what that flat bread really represents. Sincerity, truth, not puffed up, not corrupted, and so on. But sin puffs us up. It does. It really corrupts us, just like leaven. Leaven helps things spoil. This is why God wants us to put it out of our lives, not because he doesn't like leaven, because it pictures something he doesn't like. It pictures sin, which spoils and corrupts us. And so this year, I want to ask us to think about what it is we're doing. Think about it. You know, I never knew what leaven was until I came into the truth. I mean, how many men here really know what leaven is? I guess some of the ladies do, because they do some baking. I never knew what leaven was. What is it, you know? And we never knew much about the way it worked, I don't think. But leaven is a yeast-like product that causes fermentation. Actually, they say there are spores everywhere in the air, and if you put some dough out, the likelihood is that those spores will land there and start to leaven, and it will leaven itself. And again, you see the symbolism that God uses. Imagine this. Leaven, that is sin, it pervades everything, doesn't it? It's in the air. And what's Satan called? The prince of the power of the air. And he uses the airwaves, as it were. He broadcasts in attitudes of hostility, selfishness. And we can tune into that wavelength, and we can be leavened by it. But you understand my point. All you need is a small piece of previously leavened dough. You roll that into a new batch of dough. Immediately it begins to go to work, and this substance, this dough-like substance, begins to go through a reaction and change. Invisibly it works as it corrupts this new dough through a fermentation process. It will permeate that entire substance, particle by particle by particle, and bit by bit it alters the substance and transforms the bread, expanding it with air, inflating it, and it rises and becomes puffed up. Man, doesn't that work in our lives? And you understand the point. If we accept sin, if we accept certain kinds of sins in our lives, then it can act like leaven, and it can permeate us, and it can move us and change us and transform us in a wrong direction. On the other hand, we can put God's way in us, and it can affect us in a right way and in a right direction. So it's interesting that he uses leaven as this type of sin and that which corrupts. And so there isn't any of the offerings, and any of the meal offerings, in which God allows any leaven at all, except for one. and that is that Pentecost offering that we talked about, in which there were two loaves representing the Old Testament and New Testament. And they, and only they, were to have leaven in them. Why? Because we'll never be perfect. Because the church of God, the people of God, still have sin, as John says. And so we're not going into the kingdom because we have somehow been perfectly righteous. We're going in the kingdom because of Christ's blood and because of his sacrifice. And we're going to go in, even though we have sin with us. And so that offering had leaven in it. Anyway, that's what it represented. And we have to realize that you and I live in a world that is filled with sin. So God wants us to put out the leaven this time of year. And he wants us to do that act with our strength. And he wants us to think about it. So I want us to think about a few things regarding this. Because we never understood what leaven was until probably, I mean symbolically, until we came into a knowledge of the truth. And it's kind of like that to this day. Have you ever talked to people outside and asked them what sin is? You know what they generally say? Estrangement from God, for example. Doing something other than his will. A bad habit. Mistakes. Let's go to Romans 7. Romans 7. Poor judgments. Those kinds of things. And yet, God's word defines it. And we understand that it is a transgression of God's law. Romans 7 and verse 7. What shall we say then, Paul writes, is the law sin? No, God forbid, he says. In fact, I had not known sin, but by the law. For I hadn't known lust, except the law had said, you shall not covet. And so we have a world today that's really amazing. I mean, you talk to people and they say, oh yeah, I believe in keeping the commandments. And then, well, ask them, well, what are they? They don't know. They don't know. They don't know because they don't read the book, and it doesn't have real meaning for them. But again, let's go to 1 John then, 1 John 3. 1 John 3. This is a beautiful thing, to know the truth and to have God's word, because it does define sin, and it tells us what it is. And we can therefore identify it. And you need to be able to identify it so that you can begin to reject it. Verse John 3 and verse 1. The beautiful thing here, God tells us that there's a glorious future that awaits us. A transcendent destiny for mankind and for you and me. But he is asking us to do something first. And he talks about it right here. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knows us not, because it knew him not. Now listen carefully. Beloved, he says, now are we the sons of God, but it does not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we'll see him as he is. And so we can't look on God now and live. And so we have to be changed so that we're like spirit, like he is, and we'll have the same kind of glory, the same kind of majesty. We'll be brothers with Christ. We'll be like him and see him as he is. It's a glorious future. But then look what he says to us here next. Look what he says in verse 3. Every man that has this hope in him purifies himself even as he is pure. How do we purify ourselves? Isn't it what these days show us? Isn't this the process? Isn't it by putting sin out when we find it in our lives? Yes, we put it out of our homes, but Paul talks about this being the tabernacle that we live in. And this is the home we're to get the sin out of. And so he says after this, whoever commits sin, so he identifies what we're talking about, transgresses the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. And so there's no squirming or wiggle room here. It's clear God's law exists to define sin, so we know what it is. As it talks in another place about a looking glass, in which we can look and see if we've got some dirt on us. We can look into his perfect law of liberty, and we can see where we might be sinning so that we can identify it, and so we can then put it out of our lives. And so sin is pictured by this thing called leaven. It's everywhere, and all year long, you and I eat it, and we never give it a thought, do we? But that's how life is, really. We're all imbibing sin all of our lives until we can identify it and begin to put it out. We just, without even thinking about it, we enjoy it, we ingest it, and so we have enjoyed, as it were, the pleasures of sin, as it says that Moses could have enjoyed but rejected. And so tomorrow, we're going to put all of that leaven out of our homes, and we are to think about it. Now, some leaven products are very easy to spot, aren't they? I mean, you see a loaf of bread, you go, okay, leaven right there, right? Other products aren't always so easy, and that's what makes it very interesting, because sometimes there's gray areas in life, aren't there? Sometimes you get tricked or fooled, and you get sucked in, and you sin. It's another way it happens. I remember it was the days of unleavened bread, and I went out to eat at a very nice restaurant. I'm going to use some of the tithe money and spend it on a real nice meal, and I went to a French restaurant, and the French make some magnificent sauces. So I'm like halfway through this meal, and I'm going, boy, this is so good. It's so wonderful. And then a light went on, and I said, let me ask the chef about this sauce. Sure enough, you know, what are they putting leaven in sauces for? But there it was, and so I couldn't finish my meal because it had leaven in it. And, you know, so you can get fooled by leaven because sometimes it's hidden in various products you'd never think it was in. And isn't it that way with sin? Yes, it is. That we do things sometimes not even realizing that it's sinful. And sometimes we trick ourselves. I remember another day, it was a very warm, I was working that day, and I went to buy, it was an ice cream store right next door, and I went down and got an ice cream, and here again, halfway through it, I'm chomping on this cone, and I go, what? It's amazing how we can forget so easily. So anyway, most of us are running on automatic in our lives. Well, what this is training us to do is this. Stop. Think, isn't it? Because we run on automatic. But he's asking us, think about what you're doing. And what we do on this day of putting leaven out really reflects something else, doesn't it? The 7 days we'll talk about later. A number that means completion. It has a great significance. So anyway, in some cases there are sins that are very subtle. I know the Catholic Church, for example, tries to categorize them, and they have different ones that are mortal sins, cardinal sins, venial sins, and stuff like that. But, you know, we do the same thing, don't we? We minimize sins, and we always do this, and especially when it comes to our sin. Have you ever noticed that? Like, you hear people say, well, I just told a white lie, little white lie. What made it white? Why? What cleaned that thing up? What cleaned that baby up? You know what it did in the person's mind? Well, it was my lie. My lies are, they're not bad lies. I would never do anything bad, right? But you understand my point is we tend to really minimize the sins that we do because we do them and we think, well, it's not so bad. So anyway, people think in these terms that we only tell small lies. But why is that? Isn't it because we're puffed up? Isn't it because we put ourselves almost sometimes in God's position to judge what sin is worse or better than less than others? When he says any sin, anyone that we do actually would have killed Christ, wouldn't it? And so there isn't the gradations in God's mind that we see in our mind. And that's why in Galatians Paul says, again, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Isn't that a wonderful concept? You see, he's really saying don't compromise. Don't say it's a little. I can tolerate this much sin in my life. Because how much leaven can that bread tolerate, that bread dough? It begins to permeate, doesn't it? Invisibly, it begins to cause the fermentation and the corruption that causes it to get puffed up and expand. And so we see these imagery, this kind of imagery, in these days about us being puffed up, being thinking we can accept sin. And so Paul had to make a correction there in the church in Corinth. So he wants us to think about it as we prepare for his Passover. And so one of the things I think is worth examining as we do this process is our attitude as we do it. You know, there's different ways to look at this thing. Everything is reflecting in life. And the invisible things of God are clearly seen in his creation, aren't they? But aren't the invisible things of Art Bradick seen in his creation? Yes. You could follow me around and see the work I do and the way I do it, and you can say, I could tell an awful lot about you, Art, because of this. And I suggest to you, God looks at us, And he watches how we put the leaven out. In other words, we can go, oh no, I've got to do this again. It's this time of year, and I've got to get this leaven out. And it's, you know, there's other things I'd rather be doing. Or we could say, well, you know, God's holy days are here, and I've got to do this. And so we can kind of go through it perfunctory in nature and sort of just going through the motions. Or we could look at it the way I think God looks at it. We could say, let's look at ourselves, and let's look at this leaven, and let me learn some lessons. Because there's a message here that God wants me to think about, and he wants me to learn from it. And we could do this looking at the lessons. Do it zealously. Do it in a way that is showing God our devotion to him. You know, there's a lot of times where I think in churches, people sit in the congregation. I remember a friend of mine told me this. I thought it was very insightful that he said that, you know, one of the things that he had a problem with the church was, he said, all the people came to the church to be fed. And he said they shouldn't do that. He said what they should do is they should be working all week and studying all week and praying all week and living a life of God's way and fighting the battles, and then they should bring that to services to share to other people. And it's so vital and so true. Because some people are thinking that we just follow what the minister says. He teaches us, we do what he says, and then we go into God's kingdom. Oh no, no, Philippians 2. There's a real important lesson here, you see. When you're putting that leaven out, it's not about doing what the church teaches, is it? Isn't it about doing what God has said, and you have a relationship, and it's a sign that you wear on your... What's the sign do? It tells you who owns the company, that's God, or it tells you how to get to some place you want to go, doesn't it? Well, how do we get to that kingdom? We purify ourselves by putting out the leaven. So it kind of reflects, you see what I'm getting at, an attitude that we have the way we do it. And it's so important to realize how personal and how intimate this is. Philippians 2 and verse 12, "Wherefore, my beloved, as you've always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." And so this is what he wants us to do. As he says, "To this man will I look that trembles at my word," that goes, okay, God has said it, I don't want to compromise here, I want to do what he said. And so they fear to mock him, fear to give him just lip service, and so on. So each one of us stands on our own before God in this thing, and each one of us, as we put out the leaven, can look to God and show him, you know, this is our attitude. We're going to search and destroy mission. We're going to find that leaven and get it out. But again, we do this physical act. Think about it. And it's to be reflected. This is how we're supposed to address sin over our entire lives. 1 Corinthians 3, continuing this theme a little bit, in verse 8. "Now, he that plants and he that waters are one. Every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are laborers together with God. You are God's husbandry. We are God's building." And so there's a relationship that goes on between the ministry, between the brethren, according to the grace of God which is given unto me. He says, "As a wise master builder, I've laid the foundation, another built on it. But let every man take heed how he builds, for on no other foundation can any man lay than that which is laid by Jesus Christ. Now if any man builds upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, and stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire or trial, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. And if a man's work abides which he's built thereon, he will receive a reward. And if any man's work shall be burned, he'll suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved. It is by fire." Now you understand what we're talking about here. We're not saved by our works, but we are rewarded according to them. And so works play a part in who and what we become in the kingdom of God. And what he's saying here is every man's work is going to be judged. And so God is looking at how aggressive are we striving to be like he is? Or are we actively looking for sin in our life? Or are we passively going through day by day drifting? Well, all of us tend to do both, you see. But he wants us every year, okay, come back. Now you have to do this and you have to think and you have to examine yourself. Am I doing it? Sincerely doing it day by day in my life? or am I just kind of drifting? Because we're going to be judged, there's going to be a trial, and it's going to matter a great deal. And so because of that, God is warning us in advance. You're to work out your salvation with me, that is Him, and we're to do it by putting sin out of our lives. And the way we do that is going to matter incredibly, very great. Okay, so each one reminds us, each one of these times that we celebrate these days reminds us of this, that there is coming a time when it's going to be too late. And have you ever done this, keeping the days of unleavened bread? You're putting the leaven out, and you kind of put it off. You don't get to it, and you kind of think, I've got time, and eventually you run out of time. And this happens to me on so many occasions, I hate to admit it, but this is one of my problems. But there's a great lesson here, you see, because there's coming a time, isn't there, when the kingdom is going to come, and whatever we do isn't going to matter anymore, is it? And so we're warned, aren't we, in Matthew 24 and 25, over and over again. The virgins, they weren't prepared. Remember the servants, that they were fighting and bickering and drinking with the drunken, and they weren't prepared? And others would say, hey, in our age today, which I believe it is our age, in which they would mock and scoff and say, where's the promise of His coming? All things continue as before. Yes, and they won't get started in the process. They won't continue in it. And a time is coming, and it says in Revelation 22, and let's just read it by way of reminder. There's a time coming when we, no matter what we do, it won't make a difference. In Revelation 22 and verse 10, and He said unto me, seal not the sayings of the prophecy of this book, for the time is at hand. He that's unjust, let him be unjust still. He which is filthy, let him be filthy still. And he that is righteous, let him be righteous still. And he that is holy, let him be holy still. And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me to give every man according as his work shall be. And so that's what this day is here for, to remind us of, isn't it? We have a day to put the sin out. You have so much time, each one of us, 24 hours a day, the same amount of valuable time. How will we use it? How will we use it? And this time of year reminds us, be using it for what's going to count for eternity. Because the putting our sin out, developing holy character, becoming more like Him is going to count more than we could ever imagine. And that's why the people that miss out, they weep and they gnash their teeth looking at what it was they lost out on. This is so worthwhile, and what the day means to us is so important and so vital to realize and think about. Okay, let's look at something else. Luke 12, I think, has an important connection for us to make. And in verse 1, you ever be cleaning for the days of unleavened bread and think, I don't have to pull the refrigerator out? I bet it's kind of messy back there, but you have to pull it out. I've gone to people's homes. I was on a moving crew once in the Church of God, and sometimes I'd go and I know that refrigerator had never been pulled out in 50 years, it seemed like, when I looked what was back there. But you understand the point is there's a particular kind of leaven. That is, we might clean the surface of something and it might look really nice, but what about behind? What about inside, you see? Luke 12 and verse 1. In this case, in the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trode upon one another, He began to say unto His disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Which is hypocrisy. It would look so good on the appearance, on the outward appearance, and yet Jesus said in another place, inside they were filled with dead men's bones. They'd wear the proper garments. They had the right stuff. They had their phylacteries. They looked good. They seemed to do everything. But weren't they pompous? And weren't they filled with pride and filled with themselves? So they looked good on the outside, but inside they were corrupt and defiled. So you understand my point that I'm making. We're going to clean for the days of unleavened bread. We're going to get rid of our leaven. But are we just going to do it on the surface? Or will we go a little deeper? Because what it matters is, what about us? You see, he wants us to think. Do we just look good on the outside? What are we really like in the inside? What are some of our motives, really? What are we thinking? What do we really want in life? What are we after? What's motivating us? That's what he wants us to do. He wants us to go a little deeper that way so that we're not hypocrites like those Pharisees. And so the question I have then is this, as we put out the leaven, let's ask ourselves, are we really serious about it, and are we wanting to show God, demonstrate to him how actively we want to put sin out of our lives? That's what we should do this year. Sometimes leaven gets ground into things. I don't know if you have ever experienced this. I used to do air conditioning and rode in my truck. And I would eat my lunch on the way because it was $70 an hour. And I just, you know, because eating a lunch, there's never time to do it. So I would always eat in the truck on the way. The next job, we can imagine 50,000 sandwiches, crumbs going down into those, the car things that cover the rugs there, you know, the what do they call those? Yeah, mats. Yeah, car mats. So rug mats or whatever. Anyway, the point was, I remember one year, I felt really diligent. I thought, I'm really going to be zealous. So I get those mats out, and I had ground the crumbs in to the mats. I actually got out a wire brush and began to wire brush those mats to get the crumbs out and everything. And I thought about this, I thought, that's how sin is with us. I mean, sometimes it gets almost like it's a part of us. And it's difficult and almost painful to have to remove it because it becomes part of us. And we identify with who and what we are. And it can be very difficult. And so I remind us of this, that there is, as Paul said, there is a law in our members that is in our flesh. And he says this, I see a law in my members warring against the law of my mind. And it's because it's what we are. It's the human nature that's in us that really produces this sin. It's almost leaven-like, isn't it, in us? And so it is this that we have to get rid of. And sometimes it actually is painful. And Paul said, I die daily. He was referring again to his baptism and what it meant to put the old man to death. But you understand my point. There is an element of sacrifice in this process. And there is an element in which it is a little painful sometimes. So remember this. And I think we have to be willing to make some sacrifices and suffer the pain of sometimes letting something go. Letting something go that isn't good for us. Then I want to mention again, I think I did this before, but one of the most unique, I think, aspects, if you go to Revelation 3, of leaven and how it works, is the fact that leaven does not work well in a cold environment. If you put it in the refrigerator, it retards the process of fermentation. And if you put it in a very, very hot atmosphere, it actually it'll burn it, and it won't work the same way. And to me, there is such a vital lesson in this, Revelation 3 and verse 14. You and I live at the end of the age, and I'm convinced of this, and we are therefore in the last era of God's church. In Revelation 3 and verse 14, he says this, unto the angel of the church of Laodiceans write, these things says he, the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, but you're neither cold nor hot, and I wish that you were cold or hot. And because you're lukewarm and neither cold or hot, I'm going to spew you out of my mouth. And so I believe this is the era. This is the time when they would mock and say, where's his coming? This is the time when people would think, you know, I'm pretty good the way I am. You know, they would have, doesn't it say, a form of godliness, but deny his power. Okay, now if we didn't deny his power, what would we think? Well, we'd be more likely to tremble at his word, wouldn't we? We'd be more likely to do what he says and not lean to our own understanding. But I'm telling you honestly, I've watched over the several last decades, I've watched a spirit in America change, and I've watched a spirit in the Church of God change, where people now are the judge, they'll decide for themselves, and we are in this age that is lukewarm, and that's the environment in which leaven grows. And if it's in us, if that's our attitude, indifference, casual about the things of God, that's where leaven will take root and it will grow rampantly. And it's something to watch out for. This is our time. This is our age. And so I say this. This year, turn up the heat. Recognize where we are. Turn up the heat. Turn up the zeal. Be turned on about what God has revealed to us and what we understand that so few really do. Okay. Leaven is everywhere. And let's go back to Matthew 16. There, the Pharisees were, of course, hypocrites, and that was a kind of leaven. But there was another aspect about them that Jesus picked up on. You know, I find leaven over the years everywhere. I can go through my coat pockets. It's there from cookies I stuck in there. You know, it's just, it's amazing. And, of course, I had boys. And so I remember going one year, and you may have heard this story, but I remember one year I went into their bedroom, and it was the days of unleavened bread, and I was saying, okay, boys, we got to get all clean here and vacuum the floor and all this. I look up, there in the light fixture is a slice of bread. Of course, it's no longer bread. It's now petrified bread. It's been there over a year, but you understand what happens. We got boys. They probably had a bread fight, and it got thrown around, and a piece of it got up there. I mean, I have heard some of the strangest stories about where it is, because it's everywhere. But again, I want you to think about this. You and I live in a world in which it says that Satan has deceived the entire world. And they are deceived on every single level. And when God says something, he doesn't say the whole world's deceived and then, well, he really only meant a little bit of it. No, when he says it, he really means it. Only we've lived in it. So we don't see the deception because we're blinded by having grown up in it and having it affect us over a lifetime, you see. But the point is, there is a doctrinal confusion everywhere. And I really mean this. I tried to analyze this last year when I was doing a TV program. I remember thinking, you know, give me one doctrine that isn't corrupted by the churches. Give me one that isn't corrupted somehow. I couldn't find one. Everything is messy that's out there in the greater religious world. So anyway, Matthew 16 and verse 6. When Jesus said unto them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Yes, we have to beware of the leaven of them, and they are the religious leaders. And then they reasoned among themselves, his disciples did, is it because we've taken no bread? Which when Jesus perceived it, he said unto them, O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you brought no bread? Don't you understand, and don't you remember the 5 loaves and the 5,000, and how many baskets you took up? Neither the 7 loaves and the 4,000, and how many baskets you took up then? How is it that you do not understand that I spoke it not to you concerning bread that you should beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees? And then they understood how he had bade them to beware not of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And this is why the Church of God has always said this. This is why we have a Q&A. Beware, you see. Beware of false teaching, because it's virtually everywhere. The doctrine they had was definitely wrong. They had created Judaism, and Judaism wasn't God's religion, or else Christ wouldn't have been at odds with him. Every minute he was at odds with how they kept the Sabbath, how they treated other people, how they said it's Corban, so they had made all these rules, didn't they? So there, the Pharisees' laws were laws to get around doing what God had said, not to keep them. They weren't strict law keepers. They were strict law breakers, actually, by all the laws they had put together. So he told his disciples, beware of those teachings. And everywhere I've gone, everything I've thought about, I just see this so much going on. Such a wide mess of doctrinal confusion in this world. And then, once there was the disintegration of the parent church, even the people in the Church of God began to absorb all kinds of other ideas. They began to open themselves up. And I've watched this as life got messier and messier and messier for people, and they got more and more confused about these things. Notice this. Let's go over to Revelation 14, if you will. There has been a vast watering down of the doctrines in the Church of God around the world. And it's so important for us to realize that there has been a huge church that has pervaded the world with false doctrine. That church is called a woman, a harlot, and she's had daughters. And those daughters have also pervaded doctrines all around the world. And it's affected people because, as I said, we grew up in it. But remember this, in Revelation 14 and verse 4, these who were in the first resurrection, it says this, these are they who were not defiled with women. And it doesn't mean what the Catholic Church thinks, because 18 times in 22 chapters in Revelation, John speaks of a woman as a whore or the church of God. And so a woman is a church in prophecy and symbol. And so what we see here then is very clearly, it is this great whore that rides a beast, an empire, a military, political empire, and she has the controls, and out of her, she was the harlot, and she had many daughters, and those daughters all teaching these perverse ideas that came out of Babylon thousands of years ago, and so we do these crazy things we do today, like bring a tree into our house. Where does it say to do that? Decorate it with all kinds of balls and lights and all this. What you mean, if you step back just for a minute, it just almost seems silly. Why would we do such a thing? It's all meaningless. But it comes back from those teachings from ancient Babylon. And so it is that all of that, like leaven, has pervaded the world. And so there is a European Babylon, an American Babylon, a Chinese Babylon. There is this incredible system around the world with these different gods, all being worshipped in these very similar ways, in a thread that goes through it all. So my point is this. You and I are to spend our lives rooting out what is false. What is false of this doctrine of the religious leaders of this world. And this is what these days teach us, don't they? Get rid of the leaven. Get rid of those doctrines. When you find it's wrong, we correct ourselves. If we're wrong, we say we are, we admit it, and we change to what is right. And so remember this too, then, in conclusion. God gives us 7 days in which we're to keep the leaven out of our homes. And he's given us seven because seven is the number of completion spiritually. What he's really saying by this, I believe, is that we are to put sin completely out of our lives. And we do it beginning with his holy day, but we do it all through the year. Let's go to 1 John. 1 John 5. We do it through the year. And again, we are to do it throughout an entire lifetime of overcoming sin. This is what we're about, purifying ourselves by overcoming. We do that by putting out which is wrong and putting God's way, the leaven, unleavened bread, in us. And so it says this in 1 John 5. Whoever believes that Jesus is the Christ is actually, the word should be, begotten of God. And everyone that loves him that begat loves him also that is begotten of him. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. For whosoever or whatsoever is begotten of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that overcomes the world, even our faith. And so it is our faith that leads us to do what God says, isn't it? It is our faith and why we, when everybody else is doing something different, we're doing what the book says and we're putting the leaven out of our lives. Because we have faith, that we have a belief that God is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. And so I remind us today that we are to purify ourselves with this transcendent hope that really is so much greater than men could ever imagine, that says eye hasn't seen, ear hasn't heard, what's hasn't entered into our heart what he's prepared for us. The best you can think about, it's better. It's way better. Believe me, it's way better. And so it's there for us. But he says to purify ourselves, to make ourselves ready, compatible with that kingdom that is to come. And so we put out the sin in our lives. We put out the vanity, and we learn to be a humble people, sincere, the unleavened people of God.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you found the message beneficial. If you would like to know more about the Eternal Church of God, we would like to hear from you. You may contact us at 1-800-723-6108. We also invite you to visit our website at eternalcog.org. Once again, thanks for listening.